Welcome to episode 91 of Conversation Street, the only podcast dedicated to the British soap institution, Coronation Street. I'm Gemma.
And I'm Michael.
And this week we'll be discussing the episode broadcast in the UK between the 7th and the 11th of April, 2014.
Oh, second episode this week.
Oh gosh, what a busy day. I don't know if I can manage that.
Yeah, oh, it's back to my normal episodes now.
Back to reality.
Yeah, I spent all day at work today, and so did you. Our holiday's over.
Holiday's over, but it's the weekend now, so that's all right, isn't it? If only every week could be like that. Holiday, couple of days at work, weekend.
That'd be awesome.
Sounds nice.
Oh, we've all caught up with Coronation Street as well, because we didn't record any when we were away in Manchester.
We didn't watch any
when we were in Manchester. We're all up to date. And I can't believe we're at episode 91 already, because it's starting to feel worryingly close to episode 100 now.
Why do you mean worrying?
Worryingly.
Oh, because you think
we've got to do something amazing.
We don't. We just do our normal thing, and that's special enough.
We can't. We've got to do something special.
You make me tired.
If we carry on at this rate, episode 100 will be recorded on Friday the 13th of June.
Yeah, I don't like Friday the 13th.
Anything could happen.
Especially when it's a deadline.
Is it a deadline?
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
I always mark them out.
So Corrie history for this week then. We've had 35 years since Hilda came home one day to find a live chicken on her dining room table and a yard full of them. And this is another one of Eddie Yates's schemes.
Eddie!
Sell them on or sell the eggs or something. And then, yeah, she liked her chickens.
Aww.
She grew fond of them.
It's like me and you. 30 years since Frank Harvey became relief manager at the Rovers.
What a relief.
20 years since Maud and Percy's trip to Morecambe.
Yeah, these aren't great things for Corrie history
this
week.
Dull, 15 years since Leanne's abortion.
Oh, yeah, abortion.
After pressure from Nick.
Oh, that Nick.
So that's the exciting one, isn't it?
Imagine that Leanne could have a 15-year-old daughter.
Was it a girl?
Or son. I don't know what it was, actually. It probably wasn't anything.
I don't think they tell you.
No. Probably, he would be fancying Leanne's son or daughter at the moment. Who's 15 at the moment? It could be a little girlfriend for Craig.
Oh, Craig. Well.
It's also got a lot of cast birthdays this week. Or ex-cast, should we say. Kathy Jones, who played Trisha Hopkins, turned 60 this week. Our Auntie Pam, Kate Anthony, is our 50th this week. That's special. We love Auntie Pam.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Kate Anthony. And half her age, Jonathan Dixon, who played Daryl Morton, 25 today, I think it is, actually. And also, that was character of Daryl's 25th birthday as well. He had the same birthday as
his
character.
It's uncanny, isn't it? They obviously just
what
gave
a coincidence.
Up. It's a bit, well, why change it?
Right, let's get started with Street Talk.
We've had six different storylines this week. Trouble at Tip Mill.
It got a bit dark and a bit sleazy
bit
this
seedy,
week.
Yeah.
I don't like how this is going now. It's a bit, yeah.
I think you'd be a bit psychotic if you...
I'm a bit uncomfortable. So it's got a bit EastEnders this week, I think.
Yeah, it has. We also had some more Maddie issues.
Yeah, are we going to keep that storyline title just as long as Maddie is in the...
I was having to
think about some homeless or living on the street kind of storyline titles for today, but couldn't think of any.
It's kind of insensitive to make a pun out of being homeless for the sake of a joke.
No, anything goes, it's fine. Beckett beckons, we've also had a bit of on Wednesday and Friday.
Is she
beckoning or is Steve beckoning? I think we did get to see a bit of a naughty side of Andrea today.
Do you?
Well, only because like she's
making
out that they
kind of made
her
out to be devious.
Yeah, exactly. The bi guy carried on this week. We thought we'd get to see a lot of Maria's taking her revenge on Marcus, but he went off down to London for now. So it's bye bye.
Swanned off.
Bye bye, bi guy.
We also have Peter the Cheetah's getting a bit hairy looking for Peter this week. I don't think he's gonna survive this unscathed. What do you think?
No, it looked like it was kind of all over a little bit, but it's just...
thinks it's all over.
Why did he tell Tina he loved her?
He's a spanner.
Yes, exactly.
Because he was... Yeah, he's a spanner.
And we had a little bit of the Bank of Beth this week as well. The boobs of
a
Beth.
Very small. The boobs of Beth. Very small.
That's why she wanted an augmentation or inauguration, as Kirk called it.
Mm.
Yeah, I was disappointed we didn't get to see more of Beth Boob's storyline this week.
What?
That sentence came out wrong as
Should
I was
I
saying
it.
Should
I be concerned about this?
No. right,
I'm worried now. I'm going to watch where your eyes are going.
Okay, well, let's start.
Move on.
Trouble at Mill. So, yeah, it did get very, very dark this week with Gary's post-traumatic stress disorder panic attack coming back. And then this whole thing with Phelan's indecent proposal to Anna. I never thought that she'd go through with it.
I don't know. I think I thought she would because it's the only way the storyline can go now, isn't it? Because if she said no, what would have happened? More of the same.
Yeah, he would have, like... He would have just humiliated her further, I guess. Like, you were going to do it.
Yeah, I think he's going to do that anyway.
Yeah, well, she's got her contract now, but...
What does that mean?
Okay.
Are we going to actually tell people what really happened or just discuss?
Yes. Well, before Phelan got to fiddling with Anna this week, there was a bit of fiddling on the roof on Monday's episode.
That's true.
Faye's a budding actress, as well we know. When she's actually in it, she was in Annie last year. This week, Fiddler on the Roof.
Wow, what a stretch.
What classic play would she be in next?
I don't really know what we've said so far.
Nothing has happened.
Anna tells Owen that Phelan's hasn't got a family, so he's just jealous of them. Gary and Izzy are both knackered, but they've got to go to this play. Gary doesn't want to go, but Owen says everyone's going to be there.
Nobody wants to go.
No one wants to go.
I've never seen Fiddler on the Roof, but it doesn't look very interesting.
I like the songs.
I think actually, no, my mum was on Fiddler on the Roof once. Her choir at the cathedral used to do dram stuff. Yeah.
What did she play?
I don't remember, but she was definitely in it.
Really?
Yeah, I was too young. I was a little one when she was on that, but that doesn't look very interesting.
So, not only does Owen have to go to a boring play, but he also ends up being roped into serving under the new site foreman,
who's called Clive,
and he's evil.
What was the point of Clive? Because he wasn't in it for the rest of the week.
He was just in it to up the ante, of course, to make Phelan look even worse and to give Gary and Owen another reason to complain, because they've been complaining the whole time and nothing would have changed if it wasn't for Clive.
He was a bit of a nasty piece of work, wasn't he?
You could tell he was evil because he smoked a cigarette right in front of them and then crushed it on the floor, which only evil people do, as everyone knows. So Clive tells them that they've got to tidy up the site, and Gary and Owen are like, oh, we've got to go to a play. Gary says, oh, I can't stay. But Owen says, look, I'll finish it by myself.
Yeah, so Gary goes off home.
Well, Faye gets upset because everyone says Owen can't come. They try to cover it up. Anna's trying to get hold of him. She can't. He is tidying up, and then he sees a petrol tank and thinks, what I often think when I'm tidying, it'd be faster to burn everything. So when Anna turns up to the site, she hears him pouring petrol on the wood, and he's standing over it with the lighter on when she walks up the steps. Cut to the break.
Do you think he would have done it? It looked like
he was going to do it, yeah.
What would that have solved, though? Because it wasn't...
Tidier.
It wouldn't have sort of released him from his bind with Phelan. I mean,
no.
Phelan would have just been like, well, now you've got to tidy this up. Hose it
you've
down.
You've made a bigger
carry
mess
on
now.
Again. I think it was a moment of madness.
Of course it was. I mean, it just proves how desperate he's become.
If he had done it while Phelan was in the mill, and he didn't...
That would
he
make
did,
sense.
He did say that later in the week. He was like, oh, I wasn't going to murder him, but... I don't really understand what he was trying to do by...
Well, I think you're missing the point of all of this, is that it's pushing them to their ultimate limit, isn't it?
Well, Owen definitely was kind of pushed to the edge, because he had a little cry when Anna
cries.
Came, didn't
she
he?
Wrestles a lighter from him and shouts at him. So then they have to clean up the mill and get rid of all the petrol.
Yes, de-petrolify, as I wrote in the notes.
That's what they do when there's an oil spill.
Gary's like, I can't face going in.
I hate amateur theatre.
Especially when it's performed by little children. So he heads back to the flat, much to Izzy's protestations. But no, actually, he says he's gone to the flat. No, he's actually gone to the mill, of course. And that's where he finds Owen and Anna. So they all do a bit of cleaning up together.
Owen, Gary's distraught because it's all his fault. And he is right, it is all his fault. We go back home, think of an excuse for Faye, and then they're going to have to start up tomorrow as if nothing's happened. And Gary starts getting panicky and eventually ends up outside having a panic attack in the garden saying, I just want it to be over.
We haven't seen many of his panic attacks since, like, was it up with the tram crash, wasn't it? Three years ago
I'm
or so.
I'm glad they haven't forgotten that he does this.
He has panic attacks, yeah.
Although they are hamming it up.
What do you mean?
Well, if you have a panic attack, you don't need to take the next day off of work.
No. Well, it depends how bad you have them, I guess. I used to have panic attacks. I wish I'd known that I could have taken a day off work when that happened.
So he's saying things like, I just want it to be over, which kind of makes him sound suicidal. And then he says, yeah. I'm going to go and do something about feeling. And heads off. And what is he doing? I don't know. Nothing. On Wednesday, nothing happens. He's not gone off to do anything.
Oh, yeah, he hasn't done anything, has he?
Anna's telling Owen to look after Gary, don't do anything daft. Izzy's telling Gary he should have the day off, like I said earlier, because he's had a panic attack. And Gary says, well, Owen needs me. I can't not turn up.
Yeah, so Izzy's getting worried and crying, isn't she? She thinks she's going to have a breakdown.
Well, Anna says, look, Gary's not the only one. Owen's suffering as well. I'm going to go and see Val and talk to her about it.
Well, let's just... How easy is it to clean up petrol? Because we kind of skipped over that, but everything seems fine at the mill on Wednesday.
I think it would be nigh on impossible to get rid of it.
It would smell, wouldn't it? And that's another thing that I didn't like about it. It's like they're just able to cover it up, like nothing happened.
Willy nilly throw petrol everywhere on wood and expect to be able to soak it up with scrubbing it with a brush.
Yeah.
I think the whole place would stink and they'd have to rip it all out and start again.
Yeah, they completely skirted over that fact.
So, Gary tells Owen he sometimes dreams about ending it all, but he won't elaborate over what that actually means. Yet another reference to suicide there.
He had talked previously about handing himself in, though, hadn't he? But I think you're right. I was thinking, oh, he's getting suicidal.
I think it's supposed to be ambiguous, but I think he is supposed to mean I'm going to tell.
Yeah.
So Anna goes. Where does she go, Michael?
She goes to Ringley Chase.
It's a real place.
It's on a little slope, just like we saw.
Yeah.
And she's gone to see Val, but she's not there. She's gone to the gym. She finds out from Phelan because he pulls up in his car. He's so vile about Val, isn't he?
I know. He says she's gone off to try to make herself look younger, but it's not going to work, or something like that.
Yeah, words to that effect.
And Phelan goes, oh, you're trying to beg to So Val, you're begging the wrong person. You should try begging to me.
Yeah, because Val has obviously told him that she had that meeting with Anna last week.
And I can almost imagine how the conversation went. Like, keep those people in line. I don't want to hear any of their sob stories come crawling to me about it. It's your business. I don't want to have anything to do with it.
Yeah. I was disappointed we didn't get to see any of Val this week. She's
busy at the gym.
They go inside, Anna and Phelan. Anna doesn't really have much of a choice. And she tries to appeal to Phelan's better nature by saying, oh, Gary served in Afghanistan, saw his mate die, Quinny. And the stress wasn't good for him. So can Phelan go easier on them? And Phelan's like, no, but you can have lunch with me and maybe I'll change my mind. So she's obviously very reluctant, but he's got her in a bit of a bind.
Well, yeah, so she agrees when he says, don't be rude, because she is quite rude. But, you know, maybe I would be rude if I was talking to basically Hitler. meanwhile, Gary faints downstairs.
Yeah. Why?
Lightweight. I think you're supposed to think he's not had very much sleep and he's overcome with
fatigue.
Guilt. I don't know.
This is just like Tommy crashing his van when he worked that full night through.
I know.
A bunch of lightweights.
Lightweights.
And failed.
The thing is, they were supposed to be getting weekend work, weren't they, to make up the money. Can you imagine Gary doing weekends as well? Psst. Anyway, they decide he shouldn't go to work.
No.
So, lunch at Phelan's. And what's on the menu?
Malleable brie.
Lovely.
I hate brie. I wouldn't have eaten it either.
Well, he's trying to seduce and intimidate her simultaneously, which is perfect first date, by squeezing it and telling her he likes to mould it into whatever shape he wishes. Maybe he works it. Maybe he made his money from cheese strings. She gets sick of this and tries to leave, and he propositions her and says, I release them from the contract if you spend a couple of hours with me.
me thinking that we know what he means by that.
He wants to play chess. She says she doesn't know the rules, but he says, don't worry, love, I will teach you. Not really, no. They're talking about Rumpy Pumpy.
He makes her feel sick.
And he's not bothered about that. He just says, you've got this to the end of the week to decide what you want to do. So when she gets home, poor Gary's there behind the sofa hiding, so he's going to hand himself in. And he's freaking out, and she tells him, everything's going to be all right, you just have to trust me. And this is when, obviously, she decides that her personal morality and maidenhood is not worth sacrificing her family's happiness for.
This is Anna taking on her role of, like, the mother lion protecting her family again. That's all she ever does. It's always her that has to...
I know, it's pathetic, though. She used to be clearing up
Eddie's problems, and now she's clearing up Gary and Owen's problems.
She's inherited a bunch of useless oafs. I don't think I would want to protect Owen and Gary, because they are the architects of their own destruction. They cannot take any needling at all, can they? None of them can. Feeling just like winds them up and they fall for it every single time.
Yeah.
They just need to just ignore him. Don't say anything at all. Why do you need to speak to him?
They're not going to get the money for it, but I mean, I think they were trying to get by with that, but then I think Clive coming in must have been the last
straw. I haven't seen a single scene where Phelan's in it being horrible to them where they haven't reacted in some way.
And said, yeah.
Obviously, they're only doing it because otherwise it wouldn't be very dramatic and exciting. But still, poor Anna's having to put herself on the line here for these pair of Muppets. I thought he has made a stern of stuff, Owen.
So what did you think about Anna's decision in the end to offer herself to Phelan?
I think she's stupid.
I think it was a little bit too post-Watershed for Coronation Street.
They didn't show anything.
No, I know they didn't, but the implication is it was really, really seedy. I think it was a little bit too far. I think it was supposed to... Was it supposed to shock you? For Coronation Street?
Of course
Street,
it's supposed to. What are you talking about?
No, but it's a bit like Desperate Housewives. I can imagine that and being on that, but I don't know. I just think it was a bit... too rude for Coronation Street.
Who knew?
I'm not usually prude about things like that.
Well, look, you're watching Game of Thrones with me. This is just childhood. Right, so on Friday, Anna is completely beside herself. She's distracted, she's tired. She doesn't really know what's what, because she's obviously worrying about this. And then later on, Phelan comes into the cafe to say, can you squeeze me in? Gives her a card for the Dunford Hall Hotel.
You made it sound like a carry-on film. Carry-on Phelan.
She hasn't said yes yet, but she's got this card in her hand and she's got like a time to arrive.
Yes, the Dunford Hall Hotel, which doesn't exist, we found out on the internet.
Then she sees Fizz tell Jenna that she'd do anything for Hope and comes to a decision that she's got to protect her children and her family.
Meanwhile, over at the mill, Pat is telling Owen that he's in a good mood because he's got a hot date lined up. And
it was really gross, isn't it?
He's like, you should see her. She's quite a looker. I think she's quite your type.
Yeah.
Owen doesn't...
rise to it, really.
Well, he doesn't pick up the subtle hints.
I'm going to go and shag your wife, innit? Like, well, no, you're not. What wife? I don't have a wife. She's my girlfriend.
Yeah, it's all right then, actually. She's a free agent.
Yeah. Anna downs a glass of vodka. She starts to put on a lip gloss and then she thinks, oh, I'm going to make myself pretty for him.
Yeah, you said what she's doing putting that on, didn't you?
No, she's just wearing, what's it called? A sack and ashes.
Yeah. So she goes over to the hotel, knocks on Phelan's door, and he's like still very smug. I wonder whether he actually expected her to come. How long would he have stayed there? Because he was like, I was just about to go or whatever, but...
I don't know what he's playing at. He shows her the contract that he's drawn up. She obviously has read through this from beginning to end to see that it's completely watertight with her depth of legal knowledge that she's got. So meanwhile, all the family at home is making dinner for her.
Yeah, it's very sweet and domestic. She must be working late at the cafe.
None of them go to see whether she's there. They're all sort of busy like little forest animals in Snow White dancing around the kitchen.
It was another kind of cliche of like one character is really not in the mood for being made a fuss of. So what does everyone do? Make a fuss of her.
And also, I don't know when it why it takes four or five people to make a pasta bake.
I know. After all that, and all it was a tuna pasta bake.
Oh my god! No wonder she didn't eat it.
You don't like tuna pasta. You don't like pasta bake, do you?
Oh, it makes me feel ill to think about it. Anyway, over at the hotel, Anna is dejected and disgusted. She says, "Please don't do this." And he says, "You can always say no." So what's it going to be?
He's so confident and cocky. But okay. They obviously do it during the break.
No, they don't. Because Fiona off and says,
no, they're
well.
Just about to.
Then Anna takes her coat off and says, "Put the contract where I can see it." And then as she's staring at it, she starts to take her jacket off.
I do wonder whether Phelan thought that she would, because does he really think that he's irresistible, or does he just think that he's got a control,
basically,
he's got the power?
Basically, this is a rape storyline, isn't it? Because she doesn't want to have sex with him and he's making her do it. So, a lot of rape is about power. It's not about the sex, it's about the power over a person. And he's completely loving it.
Because it was, in a way, consensual. It wasn't. Contractual, but I mean, she didn't have any choice, did she?
It wasn't consensual.
She could have said
this
no.
This is where the rape thing, this is men don't understand.
I do.
No, if you don't want to have sex with someone and they make you have sex with them, that's still rape.
Okay.
Can you see?
Okay.
Right. Don't boil it down like that. It makes more sense, right? Okay, so she's putting her clothes back on, and he's such a git, because while she's getting a phone call from Owen and crying about the fact that she's just wrecked their relationship by sleeping with Phelan, he grabs the contract and he won't give it to her.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's just the final story,
isn't
it?
She's like grabbing for it and shrieking, and he's got it behind his back like, woohoo, come and get it. Ho, ho, ho. She grabs it and storms out.
He's just having a bit of fun while he still can.
Yeah, well, I don't think it's over between Anna and Phelan by a long shot.
No.
She gets on the bus, gets off the bus. Jenna tries to talk to her. Anna realises that as a glorified extra, Jenna has no reason to speak to her whatsoever.
Glorified
and completely
extra.
Ignores her. Walks off, goes into the house to see everybody making dinner for her. She looks like she's died and not noticed. And everyone's smiling and happy about this tuna bake, but Anna just wants to have a shower because she feels disgusting, and who wouldn't? Mm. I would have had a shower there.
Yeah, if you have a
I'd
nice,
be like, screw you,
nice
Phelan.
Shower.
I'm going to go and have a shower. I'm going to use up all of the free toiletries, and they better be fancy ones.
You'd be worried that you'd be there kind of perving through the keyhole, though.
I know. Hopefully it was one of those hotels where they have a lock. Some of them don't have locks in the bathroom, do they? Like, well, you're sharing a room with someone. Don't be a prude.
It did look like quite a nice hotel room, to be fair.
During the meal, Anna just cries. She just can't take it. She's so emotionally fragile, she can't even pretend.
Nobody particularly notices, really, do they? It takes them a long
they
time
don't,
to.
They
They're
don't,
so pleased with their tuna bake.
They don't take it seriously at all. They're like, oh, don't worry about Phelan. He won't beat us. And she's like, can everyone shut up, please? And Faye's like, oh, don't worry, Mum. I'll sell my stuff on eBay. And she's like, oh, my God, just everyone shut up. So they all make themselves scarce. And Faye says, I love you, Mum. And Anna says, I'm going to do the washing up. So as she's doing the washing up, Owen comes up behind her and says, oh, it's wonderful what you've done for the family.
Another
one of those little cliches where they say something completely ambiguous that can be taken in many different ways depending on what the character's just been
getting
at.
Yeah, then he tries to seduce her as well.
Well, she cringes. She can't stand to have him touch her, and this is probably where it's going to all be revealed.
Yeah.
Who her.
How long do you think it's going to be kept a secret?
Well, she's played right into Phelan's hands here, because all Phelan now has to do is say, oh, if you don't do what I tell you, I'm going to tell Owen that you slept with me.
Well, how is it going to play out, though? Because she's got this contract releasing them from it. But how's he going to... If she's going to then say to Owen, look, you don't have to do it anymore, how's she going to explain how she got it?
Yeah, she's not going to be able to explain it.
No.
But also, I don't think that contract means anything.
Well,
why does she? How can she look at it and know that contract means anything?
I don't know. I think we're supposed to assume that it does, but
you really think Phelan would go to the trouble of drawing up a proper legal contract just to sleep with Anna? He just likes being horrible to people.
So do you think that he's just
gonna
lie? No,
he's tricked her. It's all a big con.
Oh, so
I really think
it carries
so.
On.
And even if he hasn't, he can still, even if it isn't a big con, the old blackmail was, I'll tell everybody about Gary, what Gary did to me. Now the new blackmail is, I'll tell everyone what you did with me.
And also,
how can you have a legal document that says, I won't tell the police about this criminal activity as long as you do something that's also illegal? I don't think it's watertight.
So if she was to report him and say that he raped her, would the police be able to do anything about that?
I don't think so.
As you said, it is rape, but no, I don't know. She's in a bit of a bind. So do you think that? I think she's going to have to tell somebody about it. I don't think she's going to be able to keep it to herself. But Izzy maybe, because Izzy seems to be a bit of a confidant for Anna at the moment.
God, can you imagine Izzy, what she would say?
I don't think she would support her.
No, she'd be like, how could you? How could you do it to
Owen?
Never
speaking to her
after
again.
After everything that he's done for us. Oh.
Yeah.
Did you enjoy yourself?
Or maybe Jenna. I mean, Jenna was trying to angle herself into the storyline a little bit today.
Oh, she's just desperately trying to get some screen time.
But I've not particularly enjoyed the turn that this storyline has taken this week.
Dark,
and I think it could still get darker because there's still like months worth of work at the mill to go.
Yep.
But it's gonna have to end before there, but.
Yep.
Okay. Well, let's go on to is it a lighter story? I guess. Well, it's got comedy Sally in. So let's talk about the Maddie issue storyline. This has gone an interesting way again. I'm still loving this storyline. So by the end of this week, Maddie and Sophie are homeless on the streets together. I didn't particularly see it turning out this way. Well, I wouldn't have done if this storyline hadn't been spoiled on YouTube as an advert for me a few weeks ago. But
bizarre. It was really bizarre, that was.
Yeah, I like this. Seeing them out on the streets there.
You like seeing young women turned out on the street and vulnerable.
I like that it's not a storyline about somebody having an affair with somebody or like all the others seem to be at the moment.
Mm.
And I like the actress who plays Maddie.
Well, Maddie is a bit of a tea leaf, isn't she? Because on Monday, Selena Rowley from the social services turns up and demands to know why Maddie hasn't turned up to her room at Secure Lodgings.
Also,
she reveals that Maddie's been lying about her age. Unlike normal women, Maddie's pretending to be a year older than she actually is, which she will soon change her tune about when she gets to be over 30, let me tell you.
She's 17, it turns out.
Sophie is shocked that she's been lied to, and so are Sally and Kevin when they come home and Selena fills them in.
I didn't like this Selena character. She's a bit weird. She was like all dressed up posh like a social worker, but she was speaking like...
Are you trying to say that people from north of Coventry can't be posh social workers?
No, she was a bit like...
She's obviously choosing...
Slangish in her speech.
Well, she's obviously been spending her time with these ruffians from the street. She has to speak their language. So anyway, according to the law, Maddie is free to live where she likes, but because she's got this room at Secure Lodgings, she needs to let the social services know whether she's using it or not, because someone else could use it. And so she has to think about what she's going to do and then tell them whether she wants to keep the room or not.
But before she gets a chance to speak about it, Sally starts having a go at her. Sophie stands up for her, but by the end of the episode, they've stormed out, and Maddie storms out first, because that's just her answer to everything, isn't it? She can't really take the pressure for very long.
Yep.
So she storms out, so does Sophie. She's saying, wherever you go, I'll go. And Kevin says that they'll be back. Well, by the end of the week, she's not. And I think, Sophie does often like just have these strops, doesn't she?
Sophie's a
cools
very...
down quickly.
One
she's
thing
very
about
hot-headed.
She's so impulsive when it comes to like questions of morality. Like, she only sees things in black and white, doesn't she? She can't ever. She never thinks she's in the wrong. Everything she thinks she's morally correct, and so she believes that because Kevin and Sally. It's not really down to Kevin, are quite rightly saying, look, if you've got somewhere else to go, go there, because you're only here because we thought you were homeless. Considering that she's stolen off of them, I think that they are correct to say, look, if you've got somewhere else to go, please go there, because you're disrupting the family. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Do you not think so?
Yeah, definitely, yeah. And Maddie could still be her girlfriend, but living at this halfway house as well.
Well, the thing is, this is what I think. Maddie is crazy for a start, so Sophie's on to a loser here anyway. But if she didn't, if she wasn't so crazy, Sophie could say to her, and I can totally imagine Sophie doing this, oh, I'm going to save up all my money for my job working in the shop, and then I'm going to get a, I'm going to move out with you and we're going to get a flat together.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Why don't you just say that? The amount of times that people move into silly little flats, and you know, like, there's no way they can afford the rent. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
She just needs to get a flat for her, move into it. Maddie can get a job working at a kebab shop or something. What's the problem?
Well, Wednesday's episode rolls along, and Sally is getting a little bit worried now because Sophie is still missing. And yeah, they're at this halfway house. So we get to see a bit of location filming again. Sophie is such a delicate flower that she couldn't sleep overnight. And she
There's too much noise and disruption.
She's badgering Maddie a bit, sort of saying, well, why did you say you were homeless if you had somewhere to stay? But Maddie's obviously like, well, I didn't have any choice. She's very defensive again, isn't she? She's like, all through the episode, she's like, nothing to do with you. She's not being... She's very closed to Sophie. I think she still doesn't like to admit her feelings to her.
No.
Because she's had to be on the defensive for kind of all her life. She's
had to
stand up to people all her life. And we get to see that when these two guys, Steve and Ian, barge into the room. And at first they seem like they're possibly her friends, but it soon turns out that they're just intimidating her. They're like the big bosses of the halfway house. Sophie doesn't understand the social etiquette of homeless people, so she stands up to them.
Yeah,
because like you said, she thinks she's morally right and she wants to defend her girlfriend Maddie. But Maddie is like, no, she can't do that. So Sophie continues to mouth off. She gets accused of being a posh little leather.
I wouldn't argue that, although posh maybe not.
So Maddie ends up having to give these two guys some money to leave. He's going to be back for more tomorrow.
Sophie's like, why'd you do that for? We should tell the warden. Oh, shut up, Sophie.
Yeah, she doesn't
Maddie
understand.
Maddie says, bog off if you don't like it.
Yeah. Friday comes up around and the social worker comes to visit again, says that there's been complaints about the noise there. This is this big argument that happened with the boys on Wednesday.
I don't see how there can be complaints about the noise when one of the shots we saw was Maddie walking into the room to the sound of techno music being piped in from a nearby room. I don't know how anyone heard it.
No, I know, I didn't understand that.
I think that that's just bad writing, honestly.
Yeah, but Maddie is continuing to be sarky to the social worker. She doesn't want to listen. So she ends up storming off, of course, because she'd rather spend the night sleeping rough than staying in that ruddy little hole anymore, as she put it. Sophie chases after her.
Very delicate turn of phrase for a little homeless minxy girl.
I know. Sophie storms off after her, and they basically agree that they're going to be in it together, so they decide to sleep rough.
Yeah, well, they end up having a little hug and a make-up and sort of, I don't know, bonding through their misfortune. But by the end of the episode, after Sophie realises this is actually real, she has to really sleep on cardboard.
She's all the way through, she's like, I'm going to stand through you, stand by you through everything, thick and thin. What, you mean you have to put a plastic bag on my feet?
Yeah, people are nearby, she's freaking out, like, oh, do you have to sleep near people? Maddie throws a can at them and then says, look, go home if you want to. And Sophie's like, no, I'd rather sit here and sulk. I think the main thing that Sophie was talking about is that her magnificent hair no longer looks quite as plush as it usually does.
Yeah, she's a bit raggedy by the end of the episode.
She's got no makeup on. That's how you can tell things have got dire for a soap character.
Do you think she's going to be able to
hack it?
Yeah, or is she going to be back at home again?
She's such a precious, pampered princess, isn't she? She's like, oh, I work with homeless people. I know what life's like, what real life's like. None of you people do. I'm the one that's charitable. And then she's like, oh, what do you mean, sleep on cardboard? What? Where's the bed?
This could toughen her up, you know?
I'm just a bit sick of her now.
I think that Maddie's not particularly good for her.
I like Maddie, but I don't know why I do, because she's a bloody idiot.
Yeah, she's
There's
horrible.
No hope in her at all. She's going to have to go have a complete personality transplant to get out of this situation.
Well, we know that soaps aren't adverse to that happening.
But at the moment, she's completely unstable, isn't she?
Yeah. Do you think that in the end, Sally's going to be so desperate that Sophie's been away that she's going to Say, right, you've just come back, both of you come back.
I can imagine her making Tim drive her around in the van looking for them.
Yeah, because it's quite possible that by the time they're all decide not to sleep rough anymore, that Maddie's room at the house is going to be taken, because she said to the social worker, I don't want to live here anymore.
Yeah.
So I think if I was a social worker, I'd be fed up with Maddie by now.
Legally, they have to give her a room. This is what they've said. So she doesn't want that room there, then...
But we don't know when her birthday is, do we?
No.
For storyline purposes, she could turn 18 next week.
Yep.
Mm. Yeah, I think they're going to end up living back at the Websters again before now.
Oh, yeah, I think so.
It's just going round and round in circles a little bit, though, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But not in the same way as, like, some of the other storylines, like the Peter and Tina one are.
Also, it gave us a chance to see a few more outside scenes in Manchester, and we were definitely trying to see if we could spot anywhere that we could.
That park that they went to, mm-hmm. we visited on our Manchester taxi tour the other day. Because that was the third place that we found that they filmed bits of the Red Reckon. John Constantine took us there. Constantine, sorry.
And Manchester Taxi Tours.
Yeah, and I said, oh, that's the place with the little memorial in the middle. And it was.
Don't forget, if you want to have a tour and mention our names, you get a discount. We don't get anything for this, by the way, that I'm aware of. Maybe we get a present, I don't know.
It was all out by the old studios, wasn't it? Just around the corner from the Key Street Studios.
It must have been weird, actually, for them. Like, oh, back where we started.
Did going on this tour around Manchester kind of take away the magic for you? Does it seem less real?
No, it made it better.
Like, oh, it's a real place.
They're really real.
Okay.
And also, we saw some homeless people in Manchester, so
we did,
I know that
there
they're
are
really
homeless
there.
People there.
Yes, it's a serious problem. Although, not one that they're really tackling to any homeless people's benefit, I don't think, in this storyline.
No, I don't think so. It doesn't really make them look good.
It's not also not making you feel sympathetic or want to donate money or anything.
No, help out in the soup kitchen.
No.
Get your bag stolen.
He's more trouble than it's worth, as far as I'm concerned.
Okay, let's move on to the Beckett Beckons storyline then.
Well, on Wednesday, it turns out there's a bit of an academic predicament because Steve has been avoiding Andrea and they've got a project that's due in that week. They've got to work on it.
Yeah. So they decide to go to the back room of the Rovers to do the little bit of project together, and he accuses her of trying to seduce him. Because what had even happened the last time? Was it just like she heavily hinted that she fancied him?
But then she kind of like indicated that she was going to stay with Lloyd.
Yeah, but she's definitely been giving him the eye these past few months. And she tried to like pull him over to sit next to her on the sofa, and he's like, no, look, I can't be dealing with this anymore, I don't fancy you. She says, oh, I don't fancy you anyway, so argue, and then in the end they decide that they're going to do the project separately. Well, Andrea decides it anyway, so she storms off, followed by Lloyd. So on Friday, Steve is starting to regret that working on his own, because he actually is the class dunce, as Andrea called him, and he had to work until 1:30 before he could go to bed. So he's really tired that day as well. But he doesn't do a Gary and like fall over and knock his head on a pump or anything. But I did feel sorry for him with Michelle and Liz kind of making fun of him at the beginning of the episode and gang up on him too much.
Meanies.
Yeah. So I liked his excuse for why she left, saying that he'd told Andrea she had halitosis.
Yeah, he's a cheeky bugger, isn't he?
Yeah, but anyway, that leads Michelle to say, well, you better go around and beg for an apology then. Andrea, meanwhile, is finding refuge in the cab office because her neighbours have decided to have a loft conversion and she can't work there. So she's sort of bad-mouthing Steve, who then turns up. Apologises, and she does give him one last chance very, very quickly and like a little playful slap on the arm. So I think she's just playing hard to get, it seems, isn't it?
Andrea's quite a complicated character. Lloyd tells Eileen he's thinking of taking Andrea away for the weekend. He's obviously fallen for her head over heels.
Lloyd's beard this week?
No.
No, yes?
It's not even panto season. I don't know why he's growing it.
I think what we learned from David growing his little beard a few years ago is you can't get away with
it.
Don't do it. He looked a bit silly.
Although,
sorry, Craig Charles.
He was just saying to me the other day, I think my mum was complaining, that apparently it's a really in thing now to grow a beard. I think I remember reading something, but it's like a kind of ironic fashion now. I know hipsters have beards, but it seems to have grown beyond that to just...
I've never heard that.
I don't like it.
Some people suit beards, most people don't, and I don't think Lloyd does.
No, I don't think he does either. His face, though, he can grow what he likes on it.
Mushrooms.
Whatever. Steve and Andrea are now friends again, and they're in the back room of the Rovers when Steve decides to go and get a kebab, and Andrea decides to take a nap. And both of these things, you'd think, were completely innocent, but together they conspire to create an awkward misunderstanding that causes calamity for everybody involved, because when he tries to wake her up with his arms full of kebab, she thinks it's Lloyd and immediately grabs him and throws her legs around his waist.
Lucky Lloyd.
Lloyd comes in, unluckily Lloyd walks in with some flowers and finds them clinched together and Steve's face covered in sauce. I don't know what the implication was that was supposed to be. I don't want to
just
know.
Just kebab sauce.
Michelle says, "So, this is what you call homework, is it?"
Needless to say, she has her arms folded.
Exactly. Now, they try to explain, but as usual, it doesn't work. Michelle calls them pathetic and Lloyd says he should have trusted his instincts. And they, both of them, run off.
Yeah. Now, Emily and Rita saw them there in the Rovers, and they're kind of sort of saying, oh, there's another relationship over again, and that gets them talking about Dennis. So it seems like that storyline's going to be back in it next week, because Emily's saying to Rita that she pretty much needs to return Dennis's phone calls, even though Rita says, look, he's not coming back to live with me. Emily wants her to build bridges, so maybe we'll see a bit of that next week.
Well, Emily's like, well, my husband died, so I kind of can't, there's no chance for me, but you've thrown it away.
Oh, I always like it when Ernest gets a name check. It's like classic Coronation Street.
Up in heaven, he's doing a fist pump.
Yeah,
name check. So... now, this is when it gets a bit complicated, because...
It did get complicated, didn't it?
Steve and Michelle are talking about Steve's point of view of what happened, and Andrea and Lloyd are talking to Jenna about what Andrea's point of view of what happened was.
Considering the predicament that Steve and Andrea got themselves into, their respective partners were able to be won round pretty quickly, weren't they?
Only for it all to go to hell in the final scene. But anyway, Michelle and Steve are talking, and Steve says that Andrea fancies him. And Michelle's like, well, it was obvious to me. I knew all along. So that's that storyline. Then Lloyd, Andrew's trying to get into streetcars and Jenna's saying, don't let her in. No, I hate her. But Lloyd won't listen. He lets her in and kicks Jenna and Todd out so Andrew can explain herself. And Lloyd says, now I understand why Steve didn't want me to get together with you because there's something going on with the pair of you. And Andrew says, no. Steve had a crush on me and Michelle knew and that's why. I didn't want to be around him, and I've fallen for you. You're a big idiot. So, meanwhile, Michelle is saying, I trust Steve, but I don't trust Andrea. You need to go and talk to Lloyd about this. So, Jenna is there. She's come back for some reason, and she's like, I don't believe you're innocent in this, Andrea. Something's going on more than what you're saying. Steve comes in and says, oh, hope everything's been sorted out. And Lloyd says, yes, I will overlook the fact that you fancied my girlfriend. And so he says, whoa. I didn't have a crush on her, she had a crush on me. And Andrea says, well, maybe I had a crush on you, which is stupid thing
like
to say.
Teenagers, isn't
maybe
it?
Maybe I did have a crush on you, but it's all over with now, and I fancy Lloyd now, so don't worry about it, everybody, it's fine.
Lloyd just tells him to leave.
Well, Jenna says, get out, you're a horrible woman. And Lloyd says, look, just everybody get out now. I can't. I've lost patience with this.
So, who does fancy who then?
Because you see, I thought that Steve fancied Andrea and Andrea fancied Steve.
I think that Steve does fancy Andrea, he doesn't like to. He doesn't want to admit it to himself.
I'll tell you what I think Steve's done. I think Steve fancies I think Steve thinks he fancies Andrea because Andrea fancies him. And he thinks, oh, a girl
likes
me.
Paying attention to me.
She's not whinging at me like Michelle does.
Yeah.
Maybe she's a goddess in disguise.
I just think the fact that Steve and Andrew were very, very keen to make up with each other earlier in the week just shows that they must want to spend time with each other.
See, because I like Andrew and I wanted to be in it, but the fact that she lied to Lloyd and got caught out so fast makes me wonder whether she's going to be painted as the villain now, because
Andrea has been kind of a sympathetic character to most of the extent.
Yeah, but now she's lied and been shown up.
I think in the long term, she could make a good girlfriend for Steve or Lloyd, to be honest. But it'd be a shame if she did turn out to be a villain. I know that the actress has got a lengthy-ish contract, so she's still going to be in it for a little bit longer. But and she's an interesting character that I'd like to see stay as well. But yeah, you're right. I don't like her being painted as a villain in this.
I don't
know. It's the mole, the evil mole. It's like Kermit the Frog in that new Muppets movie, isn't it? That's how you can tell.
I think they're fine. I think the coupling is fine as it is, because Michelle is starting to find her feet, although she wasn't funny this group of episodes, as like the hen-picking, mouthy wife of, or girlfriend of Steve.
Mm.
She's fallen out of her groove again. She was only in it for a short amount of time.
It's also not funny when Michelle and Liz gang off on Steve.
I think it is hilarious.
If it feels like Steve is like unfairly under attack, which today.
Yeah,
if he has been a plonker, then yeah, he deserves it.
And also,
both barrels.
I don't like it when Steve and Lloyd fall out over a woman.
I don't like it when Steve and Lloyd fall out. They're bosom buddies, aren't
they? Yeah, they shouldn't be arguing.
No.
Bros before hoes.
Yeah, so...
And the female version is sisters before misters, in case you thought that was sexist.
Oh, thanks. I think Lloyd is going to take Andrea back next week. Because he does love her, or fancy.
He obviously does, because he's bought her flowers.
Yeah, those roses.
That's how you can tell.
But, I mean, the storyline's got to develop, because, I mean, at the end of the day, they're not that much further now than they were at the beginning of the week with
And
this.
Also, I'm kind of a bit... It's a bit of a non-story, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do they fancy... You don't even know.
No.
I can't tell what Andrea's thinking. I think if Steve was single, she'd go with Steve.
Andrea needs to have a little friend.
Yes, yeah, so she can confide in
There's
him.
Nobody that...
What about Jenna?
What about Jenna? Yes, that'd be... There we go. We've got two storyline opportunities already for Jenna this week. We've got this one and we've got Anna's little confidant.
Wow. Such an interesting character.
If you're not careful, she's going to be in every storyline. She's going to be the new Tina.
Oh, my God.
Okay, let's talk about the bye-bye-bye guy storyline, which kind of drew to a bit of a conclusion on Wednesday, but then kind of possibly took off in a different direction on Friday. So Maria is sulking on Monday, of course, because Marcus doesn't love her anymore. How long has it been? 3 weeks? She's not got over it yet.
Wow.
I think maybe she. I'm not surprised that she hasn't got over it yet, but the fact that she was crying in the back of Audrey's was a bit.
I'm not even interested in this storyline.
I like Maria. I quite like my. I'd rather watch this storyline than Peter and Tina, let's say.
Well, why don't you tell everyone what happened?
Okay. Well, Audrey's trying to reassure Maria on Monday's episode that everything's going to be all right, basically. And Maria just thinks that she and Liam will never get over it if Marcus doesn't stop hanging around. Meanwhile, Marcus and Todd are together because Marcus just can't seem to shake Todd at the moment.
It's like a bad smell. It's like when you fart and it follows you around.
Yeah. Marcus gets a phone call and says that Liam's babysitter was she sick or something?
Yeah, she was being sick.
Yeah, so he has to go and pick up
so
Liam because
just
she can't
scene
find
with Anna
Maria.
And Fionn.
So Marcus rushes to sort it out. Maria isn't impressed to see Marcus coming off the bus with Liam. And even poor Julie gets an ear bending off of Maria, because I'd forgotten that Marcus was living with Julie at the moment. We found that out when we were at the tour, didn't we?
We
were reminded of it at the tour when they had the little bits of paper on the windows to say who's living where. But yes, Marcus is living with Julie at the moment. Audrey tells Maria, look, just back off Marcus a little bit, because it's harming Liam at the end of the day. And Liam obviously still does love Marcus because he's like a little dad to him. How old's Liam? 3? 4? I don't know.
48.
Old enough that, I mean, that Marcus and Maria were together as a year and a half, and you can't just like pull that father figure away from a little boy like that and expect him to sort of cope with it. So Marcus tries to approach Audrey later and she's like, no, I don't want to be a go-between for you, but maybe you should let Maria be for a while and maybe she'll grow more approachable. Well, I don't know whether
maybe.
Audrey...
I don't think so.
I don't know whether Audrey thinks that they'll be able to be friends again or they'll be able to come to some kind of agreement with regard to looking after Liam, but it's not obviously not working at the moment because Maria's still got the knives out for Marcus.
Evil!
Todd's also telling Marcus that he needs to forget about Maria, but that's obviously because he wants him for himself.
Dirty ho.
And so Marcus is saying, look, He goes over to Maria at the end of the episode and says, I'm going to go to London for a few weeks. And Maria's like, I don't care if you never come back.
Yeah.
So Todd tries to talk to Marcus, but he tells him just get lost.
Yeah.
And we don't get to see him go, do we? On Wednesday,
such
he's gone.
A shame.
Yeah. And the storyline kind of slows down then for the rest of the week. There was that fight between, well, fight-ish, between Todd and Kirk on Wednesday.
That
was
unexpected.
I loved it. I love it when Kirk stands up for Maria. He always does, doesn't he? Because Todd was like, why did he even have a go at Maria? Was he saying, oh, why did you let him go or something like that? I don't know. He starts bad-mouthing Maria and Liam as well.
Now you've got what you wanted. You've driven him out, you horrible cow.
Yeah. So Maria Kirk shoves him off, so that was great. Friday, the story kind of turns back to Fizz and Tyrone. Now, if we remember, back when, just before Marcus's liaison with Todd was discovered, Fizz had seen them talking together and didn't report this peculiarity to Maria. So since then, Maria has...
All Fizz's fault that they had an affair.
I think it's pretty weak.
Well, it's Fizz's fault for saying anything.
But Fizz obviously didn't know, and I don't think she wasn't to know, so I think Maria's been a little bit out of order with this.
Yeah, I agree.
But Tyrone is saying anyway to Fizz that they need to try and make up. So he goes to the salon to try and plead Fizz's case, which he's not interested. But anyway, they're interrupted by a phone call saying, da da. Duh.
What?
Kirsty has been released from prison.
Oh, yeah.
How exciting.
It is exciting.
It's very exciting. Now, as far as we know, Natalie Comedy hasn't been back on Coronation Street. But, I mean, in a way, they'd be crazy not to have her back if she wants to come back. She did choose to leave, though, didn't she, last year?
I don't even remember. I don't know.
But, I mean, Corrie has missed Kirsty, I think. I mean, the story... domestic abuse did run longer than it needed to a little bit at the end. But we did say at the time, it'd be good to see Kirsty stay on and maybe take the long road to recovery a bit and then become a... No?
I think it's too much water under the bridge now.
Well, do you think that she should come back and be have an evil villain's proper exit?
She already had that. She already had a comeuppance.
But a comeuppance as in getting killed, which is what happens to the big baddies in Coronation Street.
No, we've got a big baddie. We don't need another one.
Well, anyway, Kirsty's been released. Maria gives a sympathetic hug to Tyrone. And she's kind of on his side even more than Fizz is by the end of the episode. Because when Fizz finds out, she kind of flies off the handle and is like, oh, what are we going to do? It's ruined our life. How did they let him out? Why did they let her out? I mean, do you think that she was overreacting a bit to the news? I thought.
No, because I'd be quite shocked because she was evil and she tried to kill everybody.
But she tried to. Fizz isn't particularly showing sympathy for Tyrone in today's episode.
Yeah,
is she more worried about herself? Does she think that Kirsty's going to try and get her? I suppose she's got every right to think that.
She's got Kirsty's kid. Don't forget that.
Yeah, that's true. Is she going
to
come
back?
And
also, she tried to stitch her fingers.
I wonder... That is interesting, actually. I didn't even think about Ruby, because it's certainly possible that Kirsty could try and get Ruby off of them, even though she did hand her over to Tyrone in court in the end, and how legally binding is that, I don't know.
No, I don't know either. I don't see what benefit there would be to... have her in it now.
Well, anyway, Fizz is freaking out, so she kicks Maria out.
Freaking out.
Because she's still mad at her. Maria leaves and tells Tyrone that Fizz is lucky to have him.
Don't know why she said that, suck up.
Yeah. So we seem to have a little bit of romance maybe between Tyrone and Maria on the cards.
Oh, you just fishing because you like them.
Oh, they showed that Blackpool Tower scene in the Coronation Street tour.
They just don't fit together anymore. That's too much has happened.
I think that a lot of the time they don't, but in scenes like this, I was like, oh, maybe. But
I'm
perfectly, perfectly happy with Tyrone and Fizz together at the moment, and I wouldn't want to have Maria kind of come between them. But, I mean, is Maria going to be, like, is she going to take out her revenge on Fizz by trying to seduce Tyrone away from her.
I don't think she's mad at Fizz anymore.
You're not?
No, there wasn't any. She just seemed like she realised, oh, my friend's in trouble, like, because this woman's been released. And I want to help her, but she hates me. Oh, well, just leave it then.
I'd like to think
because
that
Fizz was
that
more annoyed
not...
at her than Maria was annoyed at Fizz in this scene, wasn't it?
Yeah. But then at the beginning of the episode, Maria was the one that was sort of blanking Fizz in the street.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know.
Can't you ladies just get along?
Yeah, these are the nice characters.
I know, but just imagine what the evil's brewing behind the hearts of the evil characters.
Like Tina, who we can move on to next. Now, fortunately, there wasn't very much Peter the Cheater this week. In fact, we can probably sum it up fairly quickly. It was basically back to Carla and Peter having business meetings during the week, wasn't it? Which is never the most exciting thing. So he's sulking and miserable. Carla needs his help because there's a meeting today. This is Monday. And she can't drink because she's pregnant. So she wants Peter there for moral support. So, do they have a meeting in the Rovers?
Yeah, they do. Then I think all in the Bistro. They're all the same place.
I said the thing is in the Bistro because on Monday it's Sid that they have a meeting.
That's
with.
That's right. Yeah, she can't decide whether to pretend to admit she's pregnant or to say that she's on antibiotics. And in the end, when Sid turns up, she says she's on antibiotics because he's a bit of a git.
Yeah, he gets like increasingly sozzled as the episode goes on. He's kind of funny, but. Not the sort of person you'd want to do business with.
And also, meanwhile, Tina is sulking and Steph warns her not to try to put her revenge plans into place, which she threatened to do last time we saw her.
Yeah, and we see later Tina giving Peter looks, because I think this meeting with Sid must move into the Rovers, maybe.
Yeah, it does, yeah.
Yeah.
They're going to the pub
yeah.
before the break. And then they're not really enjoying it because Sid's getting more and more drunk as the day goes on. And meanwhile, Tina's giving Peter lots of side looks. And when they leave, Peter tries to get sneaky with Tina, but she won't talk to him. And that was all that happened on Monday.
Friday's episode, for some reason, starts off with Rita having this catch-up chat with Tina. I didn't really see the point of that scene.
No.
Just to remind us that Rita and Tina used to be friends.
They're busy mates.
Yeah. Tina says that she lost her way for a bit, but she's okay now. But then she actually admits that she's not okay.
No. She still loves him.
Yeah, well, the ice breaks between them when she sees that Peter is struggling to let himself into the flat because he's obviously got this alcoholic dependency issues still now. And then, yeah, later on in the episode, Tina asks him if he meant it when he said he loved her, and he says yes. And then basically the rest of the episode, Tina's decided that she's going to get her man back because he still loves her. So she texts him, says she loves him. Meanwhile, well, he's there chugging a bottle of vodka, drowning his sorrows.
Yes, that's it.
That was it, really.
So with trouble on the horizon because Tina's completely delusional. I don't know what she thinks she's playing at. She thinks just because she cornered Peter and said, "Did you ever love me?" and he said yes, that means that there's still hope for them.
Yeah.
And there isn't.
She's just driving him to drink.
Yep.
So back to the alcoholism storyline again. Round and round in circles this is going. I'm not impressed. Talking about round circles, now we can talk about Beth's boobs. She is eyeing up Eva's boobs on Monday, which is quite funny. She had this low-cut top at the factory, didn't she? And she then goes off and comes back late because she's had an appointment because she wants to have a breast augmentation. Maybe surprisingly, Kirk is unimpressed with this.
He's so nice. He loves her as she is.
I think Kirk is a pretty much as sort of back to basics kind of guy, isn't he? He doesn't need a kind of a glamorous life.
No.
And he just likes Beth as she is, like au naturel. Craig doesn't like the idea. Yeah, Craig doesn't like the idea that his mum might get a boob job, of course, because apparently Miss Skitter had one of those at school and that looked gross.
Oh God.
And yeah, Kirk and Sinead are trying to dissuade her, but she's not backing down. It's booked for 2 weeks' time. And then the only other bit we got to see in that episode is, Wednesday's episode, was Kirk had a dream about Beth's implants jumping out and chasing after him down the road. And that's something I would have liked to have seen.
Would you? I don't want to know.
Online spin-off, Kirk's Dreams. So I assume we're not going to have any of that storyline next week, and it's going to come back the week after. But looking forward to that. So she's obviously not going to have these boo jobs, is she? We said last week that she's going to pull out of it in the end.
The thing is, she could do. They can just give her a push-up bra, you know what I mean? If they really want it, it's not like a nose job or a facelift or something like that. They can actually fake a boob job.
Yeah, but I don't think they will.
I don't think they will, but I'm just saying.
Mm. It made me think about the cast members that have had boob jobs and what they must think of this storyline, because isn't...
You said Kim...
Yeah. No, I can't remember the Kim Lomas had. Or I think Samia Gardi has.
Oh, you might be slandering them.
I can't remember. But yeah, it must be a bit awkward if you're in that situation. It's like the storylines where characters get tattoos and then you have Peter Barlow that's covered in them, but I don't think he's going to lose too much sleep.
I don't think so.
Right, that's the end of Street Talk for now. Now, we're not going to have a character profile this week because we've already had like a good 2.5 hours or so of Conversation Street already this week. So let's just say that episode 90 was the little extra one for this week. But what we'll do now is move on to the cabin. It's time for the cabin. Now, cabin is not just somewhere where you can go to get news in Coronation Street, it is also the purveyor of fine literature, such as A Perfect Duet, A Diary of Roy and Hayley Cropper, an unofficial Coronation Street companion by Glenda Young.
Published by FBS Publishing, and with cover and illustrations by Owen Claxon.
Yes.
$5.99 from all good book retailers.
We're able to say this quite quickly because we have a copy here in our hands. It isn't even out yet. So thank you very, very much, FBS Publishing, for sending us a copy. So this is Glenda's new book, who is obviously the head honcho at the Coronation Street blog. Yeah, so we when we came back from Manchester on Wednesday, it was there on our doormat. So next morning I had a read, and it was I thoroughly enjoyed myself reading it as well. It's $5.99, and it's relatively thin. I mean, it's just over 100 pages long, but I mean, it's just the story of the two characters, Roy and Hayley. So I don't think it could have gone much longer than that.
Well, it can only go for as long as they had a storyline.
Right, exactly. But yeah, for what it is, it was really enjoyable and very informative as well. I mean, particularly for the kind of the Coronation Street fans that aren't regulars on Corrypedia, and it's going to bring up lots of great old memories as well. And for the people that haven't been watching Coronation Street since 1998, it's really a fantastic way to find out about the roots of, in recent history, what has been the most enduring relationship on Coronation Street. So we get to find out all about like their past, about how they first met, all the Amsterdam trip, and then there's what follows is a very detailed account of everything that happened next. And I say that this is good for the people that don't read Corrypedia a lot, but to be honest, Corrypedia can only have so much detail on. I mean, it's not got 100 pages worth on. I mean, I could only wonder at how much Coronation Street watching Glenda had to go through to get all the details on this, because it's got everything in there. It was really, really fab. And it also reminded me of a few scenes that I'd forgotten as well. Like there was one time that Roy was helping Chesney to learn about Venn diagrams. And then Chesney was saying about how he felt that nobody appreciated him, and he wasn't in anybody's Venn diagram. So then Roy made a little collage Venn diagram with Roy's things on one side and Hayley's things on the other side, and then Chesney in the middle. So that was quite cute. And it reminded me as well of the story of Roy's granddad, who'd invented this contraption for getting energy by letting people, when people walk through doors. And so Roy constructed this little gizmo to try and get energy from when people came in through the cafe. That was cool. Yeah, it's just really, really good for bringing back old memories, really. So I think Glenda's done a really brilliant job. I also noticed that, in my opinion, it seemed to skip over a lot of the stuff with Hayley's son Christian as well. I was waiting to see what she would say about that, but there's not very much in it. So I wonder whether that's kind of Glenda saying,
screw you, Christian.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about that. I think that's definitely a storyline that lots of people would want to sweep under the carpet. So maybe that's best that she did that. Now, it is just literally a discussion of this is what happened and this is what happened and this is what happened. There isn't particularly very much of Glenda's opinion on the storyline. So if you're looking for like really deep analysis of the social effects of this transsexual on Coronation Street. You're not going to get that in here. But if what you're looking for is a good short read that shows you all the details of the storylines of Coronation Street's most beloved recent couple, then you can't go wrong with a perfect duet, really. I was very pleased and enjoyed reading it.
You did. You ploughed with it, didn't you?
I did.
Really enjoyed reading that.
I don't read things very much.
No, you don't. When
for
you
a teacher,
do,
I'm not a big reader.
Reading.
Yeah, so I read it all in one sitting. So it was great. And so that comes out on the 24th of April, $5.99 from FBS Publishing. And I think if you pre-order it, you get a signed copy as well from Glenda as well. Mine isn't signed, but
aww.
I'll live.
It came through in the publisher, didn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so hopefully there'll be lots of people picking that up soon. Now, second bit of news, or this is the first bit of news really. Debbie Rush had a little bit of a celebration last weekend. It was her 25th wedding anniversary to her husband Andrew. So to celebrate, they renewed their vows.
I want to renew my vows.
Can't do it. We've not even been married 5 years yet.
I want to wear another dress.
No, gotta wait a long time. So it was basically a good excuse for having a big party with all the Coronation Street people.
I won't look as good as Debbie Rush does in 25 years' time, won't you?
She did look pretty glamorous, didn't she?
She looked fabulous.
Yeah, and there were lots of other Corrie cast members there. It was held at the St Michael's Church in Bamford. And, of course, on these occasions, Gemma does like to do a little fashion spot.
I don't know if I should.
Why?
I told you, not too impressed.
You're not too impressed with what they were wearing this time.
Well, let's talk about what the glamorous Debbie Rush was wearing. She's got on, I think she's got a Cartier Love bracelet on there, which are very expensive. Could you buy me one of those, darling?
No.
Okay. she's wearing a plunge neck, very plunging. plunging V-neck, it's like a halter neck, a kind of dress with a tie waist. It's not ivory, it's completely white, and she seems to have like a little pearl bracelet on one side as well. She's got glamorous red lipstick on and also matching red nail varnish, and she's got her hair, she's curled it in nice ringlets. I was quite impressed by Brooke Vincent.
Yeah, I think Brooke Vincent
forward.
Is pretty good.
She's got kind of like a 70s floppy hat with one side of it's kind of a peachy pink and the other side of it's black with a black tie around the headband.
It's the kind of thing that I'd imagine Two-Face from Batman wearing if he was a woman.
If he was a lady. She's got a peach jacket on and she's wearing a jumpsuit, with a black jumpsuit with a black belt, white pointed court shoes and a sort of like a little satchel style clutch bag. I think, who's the lady who plays Eva? I always forget.
Catherine Tilsley.
Catherine Tilsley also had on a jumpsuit, but I haven't got to her yet. We're looking at Katie Kavanagh at the moment, who is channeling Julie somewhat with her fur-trimmed white coat that she's got on, which is quite nice. She's got a sort of a what's that kind of pale royal blue?
Yeah.
Looks like a bodycon kind of dress with a little kind of slit at the neck. It's very in colour. It's like a pale cobalt blue.
Yes.
I
disagree with you. Whatever.
Yes, correct.
Yeah, she was wearing clothes and they're
Debbie
blue.
Rush also had on a pair of gold platform sandals. I think she's got a bridesmaid there with a similar dress to what she's got on, but it's kind of in a blue.
Bluey, light blue.
Blue colour. The cute little Ellie Leach is wearing a pair of platform sandals in black with a ankle socks in the same colour.
I think Ellie looks pretty cool
cute.
As well, actually.
She's got a black blazer on, and underneath she's got a white and blue patterned sort of kind of tunic dress and a little clutch bag. She looks quite sweet there. Skipping over the ones that look hideous.
Helen Worth.
Well, Helen Worth, I don't know what to say about you, Helen, because you've got a puffer jacket on, which is not appropriate. It's hard for a wedding, even if it is in Manchester, and even if it is actually really wedding vow renewals. She seems to have a leopard skin.
Yeah, she's channeling Bette Lynch there a little bit as well.
I'm going to move on before I say anything else. The fragrance Jenny McAlpine is wearing a pair of she's got on a pair, I hope these are white tights that she's wearing. If not, she needs to get herself to the Sun Lounge pronto. She's also wearing pointed courts, which are a big thing this season. She's got a nice pale blue tote bag, and she's got a polka dot dress in black and white with a pink coat over the top in a nice patterned swirly pattern colour. Quite nice. She's got her hair down. Debbie Rush also seemed to have like a little a furry pashmina thing that she wore, which is awesome. I always thought it'd be nice to have a sort of cold weather wedding. We had one, but it was in August. I wasn't prepared. So you can wear little furry doodads. What else have we got here?
Just I think we've seen most through. Of the people now.
I'm trying
we?
To find. Oh, there's. So here's Lucy Jo Hudson and Alan Hulson. Alan Hulson looks very dapper and swish. He's wearing brown leather shoes with a matching brown leather belt and a navy sort of two piece suit with a nice light blue shirt underneath. And Michael could certainly take a few hints from him as to what to wear to a posh occasion. Do you think wearing your school shoes means that you're dressed up?
I was wearing my Nintendo t-shirt to Annie's restaurant the other day, I can't believe.
And it has an upside down L on it, which just goes to show. And Lucy Jo Hudson is wearing a nice kind of teal, or sort of, it was kind of like a green, sea green chiffon shirt with a little statement collar bib necklace thing. A neon yellow clutch bag and some floral pattern trousers with, again, pointed beige court shoes. And here we go. Here's Catherine Hillsley, who I said was wearing a jumpsuit. She is. It's got a sort of gathered neckline, a tie waist, very wide-legged trousers, and, again, a peach jacket over the top, which looks really nice. And I think those are the highlights of the event.
Wasn't Sally Dinover in there somewhere?
Oh, yeah.
Looking like she's wearing something from Laura Ashley.
Oh, and also a very haggard-looking Julie Hez.
Yeah, she looks... It's not a very good picture.
I don't know what to
there.
Say about you, Julie. Again, you've got on a pair of... Are they flat-laced shoes? Black tights? It could be a nice dress. I can't see it in the way of this ugly little messenger bag that you've got on. and a furry white jacket.
It's pretty horrible.
I think it's a bad photo. I'll just say it's a bad photo.
Yeah.
She looks lovely normally. And
Sally
has got on a nice patterned blue floral jacket. And she's got a nice big present in a bag there. I all know what that is. And that's it.
Okay.
There's my report.
Thanks. And all the men can carry on listening to us.
That was quite boring, wasn't it?
you like doing that kind of thing. I'm sure there are some people that love your fashion spot.
This is why there's no such thing as a fashion podcast.
Because it's just describing
it's just
clothes.
Saying colours and styles of clothes.
Final bit of news.
Michael made me do it.
No, you love doing it. Helen Flanagan, it's been a slow news week. There's not really been any Coronation Street news this week.
I need to introduce this, otherwise you can't do your quote. Helen Flanagan has been in she's been in lots of papers recently. She looks very odd recently.
She's never out of the papers.
She's either had a nose job or she's very good at contouring.
She has a nose job
different.
Last year. She's also very orange at the moment. She was in the newspaper with a very heavy fake tan from this week.
Yeah, what was she? She had. Oh, she's got the most gorgeous beige Chanel flap.
I want
it. Anyway, she was in The Sun telling everybody that she's interested in returning to Corrie. Michael?
Well, she was asked it. Yeah, I haven't. Helen Flanagan hasn't featured in the podcast for a little while, so I don't know whether she'll sound.
A bit rusty.
Yeah. I'm really busy at the moment, but I'd never say never to go back to Corrie. It'd be nice if I ever had a child, but I'm really happy with how things are at the moment. I'm very independent and focused, and I like it like that. I've really enjoyed finding myself after Corrie. It was a great job, but it takes over your life. It's been nice to get away from that and try new things. I'd like to get back into acting at some stage, but I haven't quite found the right part. At the moment, I think it's important that I have my own time to myself and time with Scott. I really like having that. There you go. That's what Helen Flanagan had to say. So, I mean, it's not been the first time that she said she'd like to come back to Coronation Street, but...
I think it's obviously not the first time someone's asked her if she wants to go back to Coronation Street. She's being very gracious and not burning her bridges, which is a wise thing to do.
Yeah, I would welcome Rosie back with open arms.
Yep.
I think she'd think it would be wonderful that Sophie and Maddie are going out. I think Rosie would...
She'd be like, God, that's amazing. You're going out with a homeless lesbian.
No, she would. That's what she'd say. She's probably seen her fair share of homeless people in London as well.
Yeah.
So she knows all about it. Yeah, so that is the news this week. Yeah, very little Coronation Street news this week, so we had to pad it out a little bit. But let's move on now to the feedback. So we'll round off today's podcast with a bit of feedback. First off, thank you very, very, very much for all the comments and likes and retweets and such and so on from during our Coronation Street tour. We got absolutely loads of
it was like the Royal Tour. Like Kate and Will's going to New Zealand.
It was.
Michael Jeremy went to Manchester.
Yeah, and we got lots of lovely comments. Too many to mention, but I'm glad that for those people that can't go on the tour, you were able to live through it.
Vicariously,
which lots of... I knew the word, what it meant, really. I just asked Gemma what it meant just to check. So, thank you very much for all that. Also, thank you to Darren, who sent us some 20-year-old pictures of when he was on the Corrie search.
Yeah, that was so
quite
cool
to see. And if anyone's got any questions about the Coronation Street tour or any of the other bits that we saw in Manchester, do let us know. Send us an email, or we've got a little thread up on our Facebook page that you can write some questions in, and we'll try to get those answered next week. We've already got a couple of questions there, so we'll put them off until next time when we can answer them all together. But yeah, anything you want to know about if you're planning a trip there, or if you're not and you just want to find out more, Facebook or email us to let us know. So we'll start off with our weekly email from Tivor. Now, this was sent before we met her this week. But she says, I really enjoyed watching Peter's reaction to finding out Tina might be pregnant on top of Carla's announcement, the panic attack and the dive into the bottle. Chris Gascoigne did a great job. The scenes with Steve were good as well. And we all know how terrible Steve is at keeping secrets.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not even come into that actually this week, has it? Steve's got his problems of his own this week. But He could be the one that reveals the affair, particularly as he's got
true.
The girl working like at his pub.
Yeah,
not gonna be able to keep it to himself.
Maybe getting sick of people telling him he's got no morals.
Yeah, she continues to say, I agree. It was okay for Michelle to consider going to a hotel with Carla without telling Steve, but she gets to tear a strip off Steve for it. I really hope I get to see Steve turf Michelle out on her backside after the way she treats
I'd
him.
I'd love to see that happen as well. Can you just imagine her face? That would be the best way for me for
he's that's Michelle not going to gonna happen. She's going to storm out with her arms folded or on her hips. Unfortunately, that's going to happen one day. I hope it happens. I hope they don't stay together and get married.
Why not?
Tivor also can't wait to see what Tina's reaction is going to be when she finds out that Carla's pregnant after everything Peter told her when he dumped her. She is still hating the Sophie and Maddie storyline, whilst liking the character of Maddie herself. I think I just got to accept the fact that I really don't like Sophie. The only redeeming features of this storyline are the actor playing Maddie. She's very good, and Sally's over-the-top snobbery. We were talking to Tivor about that when we met up with her this week. As our class. I really don't have a problem with Brooke Vincent. I think she's fine. And that the character is written to be a bit stroppy, but she's still just out of that teenage stage, I guess.
Oh, no, she does my head in.
I really don't mind her. I don't mind her at all.
The storyline is Dumb and Dumber, isn't it? They're both stupid.
That's why it's kind of funny, I think. I don't mind her, and I don't mind Faye either. He's another one that people kind of hate for probably similar reasons. And then she finishes off by talking about Michelle Collins's lovely northern accent. From my Canadian ears, I didn't think Michelle Collins' accent was that bad, but I wasn't a fan of her whispery voice or the utter failure at being believable when acting emotional.
Ooh, throw down. Yeah, she just kind of winced, didn't she? Did she think she had Botox?
Maybe.
I don't want to be horrible, but...
Well, buy her autobiography and find out. There was only one reason they put Jason and Stella together. It was simply a plot device to push Carl over the edge, knowing he'd lost everything, including Stella. I think you're probably right. It was just a bit of a far-fetched plot device. I hate it when they do that. I'm sure they could have thought of something a little bit more believable.
Yeah.
We got another email the other day from Gail. Not Gail off the Coronation Street, but real Gail. She says, Hi Gemma and Michael, just finished listening to your podcast and wanted to let you know how much I enjoyed the character profile of Eddie, who was one of my favourite characters. I also enjoyed Jeffrey's performance on Keeping Up Appearances and Heartbeat. Yeah, well, I enjoyed doing Eddie Yates as a character profile. It's always good to do like comedy characters now and again, so it's not just
yeah,
the drama.
Yeah, exactly.
Seriousness.
So you really divide it up by classic or current, and really you should be dividing it up by comedy and serious.
Yeah. Michael, you had wondered if Jean Alexander had had a role on Heartbeat. Not to my knowledge, but I remember her well playing a sweet little old lady who ran a second-hand shop on Last of the Summer Wine. I think that's probably what I was thinking of. I didn't used to watch Heartbeat or Last of the Summer Wine, but I remember seeing her playing a sweet little old lady on something, so I think that must have been it. And Gemma, compliment for you here. I laughed out loud at your comments regarding the outfits that Michelle and Carla wore to the funeral. Totally inappropriate. Well, Gail, I hope you also enjoyed Gemma's comments on
someone's got to enjoy it.
On what people were wearing at myself. Debbie Rush's wedding. And finally, we got a message from Joe on Facebook today saying that she enjoyed our alternative podcast episode 90, and I'm pleased to see that we have inspired her to go and do a Corrie location tour herself.
Yeah.
Well, I emailed Glenda the other day and with all the locations that we visited, and if you go onto the Coronation Street blog, down the side there's a link there to visit to locations in Manchester, and all our bits are on there. So if you go to coronationstreetupdates.blogspot.co.uk, you'll find where you can go to see Audrey's house, Phelan's house, the church, all those other ones. So if you're going up to Manchester for the tour, then it's definitely worth going to have a little bit of a look around those places.
Have a bit of a stalk
like we did.
Yeah.
And Jo goes on to tell us a little bit about her history of Manchester, because up until 3 years ago, she lived in Eccles, near where we stayed. And her grandparents lived on Highfield Road, which is where Chimney Pot Park is. And I worked right opposite Audsall Hall, Salford, until I had my baby 2 years back. So that's kind of interesting, finding out all those places. And one of our listeners lived there. Mm. She also talks about times when she saw people on the set. She said one time she was having a walk and she bumped into John Stape throwing the body slash carpet into the canal, which must have been a bit bizarre. And she also talks about going onto the Corrie set last year with Glenda, and she got to meet Tibor too, and she remembered to sit on Maxine's bench, unlike us.
Gutted.
Can't believe we missed that out. And that is that for episode 91 of Conversation Street. Don't forget, if you've got any questions about the tour, our tour, or just going there yourself, give us an email or write to us on Facebook. Or if you've got any comments or questions about anything else, you can email us at conversationstreet@gmail.com or go to conversationstreet.podbean.com to leave some comments on our blog. Leave us a review on iTunes if you have such capabilities. And you can follow us on Twitter and like us on Facebook. We're at conversationstreet on Twitter, and just search Conversation Street on Facebook if you'd like to give us a like there. So that's it for another week. Final word, Gemma.
See you next week.
Good one. Bye bye. The music for this episode came from podcastthemes.com.